the skies above Koldon, a silver dragon winds through the clouds, her body long and twisting as she draws closer and closer to the ground. The great dwarven city below her, made of tunnels carved deep into a wide, hollowed-out mountain, twinkles in the dark, where sunlight can't reach it, and where ore glows bright, soon to be melted into the most beautiful of weapons. Gracefully, the coiling dragon shifts into a woman again before landing in front of the dwarven queen. Covered in scars and burns, Xandria's pinched face is hard, and her eyes are clever.
"If it isn't Cassandra, the fearsome guardian of the Northern Peaks," Xandria says in Dwarvish. "And without your bodyguard, it must be an emergency. I assume you're not here for my excellent company."
"No, Xandria. I'm afraid this is not a social call. And I trust you know better than to give me cause to need a bodyguard." Xandria reaches up and clasps Cassandra low on the back, high as she can reach.
"Come in, old friend, and no need to get your dander up. After all these years, I know better than to poke the dragon."
And the elven queen places a hand on the shoulder of her dwarven counterpart, and they exchange smiles like old friends. And then the two fallen rulers prepare to talk of war. A day's ride from the ruins of Silverscale's old capital, General Amara is standing in a village. It's a village in the taiga, beyond the palatial estate, several miles into the wilderness. Amara stands in her royal armor on an iced-over barrel in the center of town, frost touching her cheeks and snow sitting heavy on her shoulders, and she's giving a speech to a growing crowd. "Silverscale was a great nation once, and I believe it can be again." Some of the onlookers stare in shock, others whisper fearfully. The eyes of a few light up, and several can see the dragon in her when Amara squares up against their disbelief. "We were swept up in Vire's tides, like so many of our neighbors. But it is more crucial now than ever that we stem that tide, that we push back against this evil. I know it feels like we've already lost, but it's never too late." A heavy silence falls over the crowd. Amara stands tall and resolute, unbothered by the snowflakes settling on her eyelashes and on the fingers wrapped around her sword, her father's sword. The blade catches the light as she holds it up, the Grey Frost family crest glinting on the hilt. "You swore loyalty to my family a century ago. And just as my father laid down his life 90 years ago in the war against Vire, I am prepared to lay down my life with you now. I would ask nothing of you that I would not give myself. And I swear that any stand we make, you will find me on the front line. There is something sinister coming. Something I know you have felt bleeding into our home in the last century. Something we cannot let swallow the rest of the world." And to a mix of gasps and cheers, Amara takes a Viren flag from its post in the town square and spears it on her sword, slicing it clean in two and letting the remains flutter to the earth below. "So I ask you now, Will you stand with me? With the gray frosts, with silver scale. Will you stand against Vire? In a different plane of existence, in a dark room where the hanging lights that swing from the ceiling are dim, and the world's colors almost non-existent, a giant eyeball hovers over a round table, and an unsigned letter unfolds itself for him to read one more time. Vire and Hell have a contract, he says to himself, in a voice that echoes around the other minds in the room. Vire and Hell have rules. A deck of playing cards shuffle themselves absently at his behest, and the other people at the table accept the cards dealt to them quietly, with downturned eyes. Silently, the bid moves around the table, people putting down crumpled notes and copper coins. A few people trade in old cards for new ones.
What if?
A Kyle man says softly, sitting across the table and looking up from his hand.
Boss, what if somebody were to break the rules?
Blink says. Don't talk when I'm talking. The door across the room swings open, and cold night air blows in from the dock. And in the distance, something huge and eldritch squirms in the icy black water. The man instantly squeaks an apology and stares down at his cards in a trembling silence. After a moment, the door closes and latches itself. A few minutes later, Blink tilts to the side, curiously. Break the rules. Oh, little Reva, he says, laying down a pair of aces. You don't know what a gem you are. A Kyal woman, with four kings folded face down on the table before her, asks,
What do you want us to do, boss?
Oh, nothing, says Blink, the pile of coins and notes dragged by some unseen force to join his other winnings. Not yet. It's all about timing, my friends. And he can't smile. But if he could, it would be a terrible smile when he says, That and having a few surprises up your sleeve. In what remains of an old and beautiful forest, Eilish, caretaker of the young and the old, of the sick, and of one tiny barking dog, stands at the edge of the 12-mile scorch mark that mars their home, and looks out over ash and mist. She sees skeletal trees, burnt black, and dirt smeared with ash, and knows that something horrible is coming. Something bigger than their forest and bigger than their home. Something that threatens not just this place, but every place. Between Tonra's words and what the cards whisper now, the visions they share with her by candlelight, the druids and their allies are going to need help. She already knows that. They are going to need all the wisdom, all the strength, all the help that the natural world will grant them. Every creature across land and sky and sea who will heed their call. Because, Eilish can already feel deep in her bones, there is nothing natural about what they are to face. Her fingers are growing numb with the cold, and her voice weary, as the handful of druids she could gather, members of their fallen enclave, approach the final lines of their incantation, drawing now on its second hour. Finally, they reach the last line, their voices dying out one by one. And when they finish, everything is quiet, but for their labored breathing and the sounds of the forest at night, crickets and the wind in the leaves behind them. And then, like the heartbeat of the forest coming to life, the ground rumbles under them. And somewhere far in the distance, a cacophony of sound rises up as the forest screams. The little dog Fawn leaps into Ailish's arms, and the other druids stare in wonder. They had called on the forest, and now, with a roar of voices, the forest was answering. In the capital city of the Unholy Empire, in a castle of stone and steel, a demon is writing a letter. It's short and firm and more than a little bit threatening, and Zira's black feathered wings flutter when his lips curl back with satisfaction. He signs his name in delicate cursive, his long black nails grazing the parchment, and prepares to trade one debt for another. After all, not all debts are created equal. And he already knows that what the purple cat owes him will prove far more useful. In the same castle, several floors up, the Queen of Vire sits at a desk in her bedchamber, bent over a scroll littered with arcane symbols, her brow furrowed in concentration. Slowly, Saphira moves her hand through the air before her, speaking under her breath, until the fabric of reality itself seems to ripple. And for an instant, it looks as if she can almost grab it, almost wrap her fingers around it and pull. Then she groans, bright drops of blood dripping from the tip of her nose and splashing onto the pale parchment below, and her eyes roll back. Danny, hands shaking and eyes wide, draws close with a cup of tea and dabs at her face gingerly with a white handkerchief. Saphira closes her eyes, fighting back a skull-splitting headache for several minutes that threatens to make the room spin, and lets Danny guide the tea to her lips. Head lolled forward, she eventually opens her eyes and then tilts her head curiously. At Danny's ankle, a large burn mark is visible, angry and red, beneath her silver cuff. Saphira catches Danny with a single finger by the front of her blouse, pulls her close, and makes eye contact. Yellow eyes stare directly into Danny's, and the handmaid's breath catches as someone else pushes into her mind and sifts through her thoughts. After several long moments, Saphira releases her. "You'd better see the healers for that ankle, Danya." And, slowly bringing the tea back to Saphira's lips, Danny answers, "Yes, my queen." And in a mangrove swamp set into the Gulf of Zyron, the amphibian poet known as Drakdor Nuz stares into a series of circular green pools surrounded by white arcane symbols and watches these events reflected in the different pools around him. He watches as these people, these interesting people, change history. Drakdor blinks slowly with two sets of eyelids, and then places several long fingers along the edge of a seventh pool to watch a group he's seen over and over again, more and more often as they become more and more important. As their choices change the world around them in ways they cannot yet understand. As they put everything he's just seen into motion. Drakdor watches Gideon, Tonrir, Ira, and Reva as they land at the edge of a fallen city, containing the third and final curse, and takes a deep breath.
"This," he says, "should be interesting."
Then, more quietly, as he dips his quill in wet ink, something he should not say, something he should not think, as a passive observer of history, but something he can't help wishing nonetheless.
"Good luck. You're going to need it."
Oh, you stopped the music.
Man, it's all about to go down.
The fuse has been lit.
No pressure, but it does kind of seem like it all hinges on you guys, doesn't it?
But it sounds like Drakdor just gave us good luck, right? Because can he change things? No.
No, he can't change anything. No, he's a passive observer of history.
He's like a wildlife photographer.
Who says good luck to the zebra getting chased by a lion?
Exactly. You are the zebra.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
just mm-hmm. Going, I'm rooting for you, bud.
If we all clump together and our stripes match, then they can't see which one's which, right?
They won't be able to tell your head from your butt. And you'll be fine. So I'm sure that works with ghouls, right?
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
It doesn't. Shall I remind you where you are?
Please do.
You four are outside of, well, five, actually, if you count Reyna, are six if you count the Fate Cub, seven if you count Rulthuin, seven. Nope.
Seven.
Eight if you count Tassir. All eight of you.
All you chuckle fucks.
Are outside the ruins of Dessa. The landscape around you is green with moss and pine trees, and you are a mile, maybe 2 miles, outside the cityscape. The air smells like sea salt, and the sun hangs directly overhead in a gray sky, dimmed by clouds that look like rain is coming. To your right is a misty cliff that sweeps down black rock into the churning ocean. And ahead of you is your ghoul, Dessa.
Ahead of us is our ghoul.
I heard it, but I didn't say it.
The peninsula you are on juts upward like a giant finger towards the ocean, high above the waters, with Dessa perched on the very tip. Walking towards the city, you are both walking up a hill and walking further and further out over the ocean and further away from the forest, with the rest of Gamor at your back.
That sounds very precarious.
It is a very precariously positioned city. And there's actually like a lighthouse, like a really big lighthouse on the furthest tip of Dessa, closest to the open sea. And you can see that tall building is still standing. You can see it from here. So that's where you are. What do you do?
I ask a question.
To who?
To the GM.
Hi, it's me.
Hi, it's you.
Hello.
I would like to think that Tonrir has a generally good sense of the vibe of life, just in general, you know, between the grass and the trees and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does he notice anything different as he looks toward Dessa? Does he feel anything different?
Other than the general sense of impending doom?
Yeah, other than the fact that the city itself looks like a graveyard. Yeah, I mean, you have this feeling that the closer you draw to Dessa, there's just less life. There's not sound. coming from that direction is pretty quiet. The forest at your back is alive. It's the way that you would expect a forest to sound. But you have the overwhelming feeling that before you, not so much.
As Tomer is looking around, he keeps glancing back toward Dessa. And he just doesn't know what to do. He's a bit lost because it's a very new feeling, or lack of feeling in this instance.
I think Ira is looking at that piece of paper where the poem is written down and kind of just reading it over and over again. And now that he's here near Dessa and can kind of see the landscape and the city far off, things are making a little more sense, like the light and the keep of that light. So he's just kind of mulling it over.
Everybody give me a perception check.
22 for me.
That's a 9.
You are near city.
I got a 15.
The funny thing is, I was over here struggling to do my hair, and it's still pulling a little bit, so I'm going to have to do it again. And I was going to say, Gideon has landed and is struggling to fucking do her hair. And I would say that that tracks because I rolled a natural one.
Oh, no.
It's all that wind from the ocean. It's just like blowing into your face.
The ocean is no friend of Gideon and her hair.
Reva folds her arms and looks over at the ruins and is just like, well, this probably isn't the creepiest place I've ever been to, but it's pretty high up there.
That probably makes for exactly one of you.
To quote Cass, tell me what I see!
Ira. Ira got a 15, Tonner got a 22. Ira,
give me the deets!
Ira, you... It's weird because Des is super creepy, but it kind of looks like in the distance, somehow the sun is shining down really aggressively at Dessa. Tonrir, that's not what you see. Now that you're really looking, you see it does at first look like a trick of the light. Like maybe the sun is shining down really aggressively in a certain spot. But as you look more carefully, as you look closer, you realize it is light that you're seeing. But it's not from the sun. There's a dome of light that meets the ground in the distance and then stretches up in the sky over the city. Like somebody wrapped Dessa in a thin golden bubble.
Oh, I hate being right.
I think Ira will say, like, looks like there's a break in the clouds up by Dessa.
Tonra, Reyna is looking at Dessa pretty similarly to how you are looking at Dessa, and you get the impression that Reyna also sees something.
Does anybody else see that?
See what?
Reyna nods.
It's not just a break of light over that, what we could call a city. There's a thin layer of light, almost like a dome over the entire place.
That's weird.
seems weird.
That isn't a normal thing, right? That's pretty strange.
Never been to a city. Is that what cities are like?
You have been to the city of fire.
Hey, Gideon.
Yo.
Roll me a dex check to put your hair up, but roll with disadvantage because the fake...
Is the fake cub fucking with my hair?
The fake cub chuckles and is like, you realize that like it's been touching the black horn to you this whole time. So you're fucking fixing your hair with disadvantage.
Okay, so dex with disadvantage?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to beat that. Oh, no, natural one. Okay.
Your hair is down and it's all over your face and you're eating hair and you hate it and you can't get it in a bun and you don't understand why and you hear
it chuckles.
Well, where do you go? The forest is behind you guys. Dessa is in front of you, probably a good mile in front of you.
Ira turns to the forest.
Ira runs into the forest.
Ira's like, well,
I'm fucking out. Bye.
Can you remind me what the time of day is?
It is noon.
Noon, okay.
Noon o'clock. Sun is straight up above you, but there's lots of gray clouds and it kind of looks like rain.
How close does the tree line get to the city?
You're about at the edge of the tree line now.
Okay.
The trees are starting to like thin out, and so the mile from here to Dessa is pretty sparse.
Tomer looks at the forest, longingly, knowing that he's going to be walking away from life toward unlife.
Unlife.
Also known as death.
Kind of reluctantly starts shuffling off that way and then looks back to see if anybody else starts following him and rolls away and casts off toward the sky to follow from above.
I think Reva exhales, rolls her neck, and starts marching up the trail following Tonrir.
Grumbling in frustration at the fate cub's antics. Gideon will throw a glance at Reyna and then start following Tonrir as well.
Ira will head up the back and follow everyone else.
Yeah, Reyna had their sword drawn and their shield out. And then as they sort of take in the surroundings, they slowly, you know what? No, fuck it. They carry it out. They're ready to go.
Did they do that? Did they like start putting it back? And they're like, no.
They start putting it back. They did a vibe check and then they were like, no, thank you. And you can see, although they're walking like very calmly, you can see that they are constantly looking around you. They're very smooth about it, but they are bodyguarding their ass off right now. They do not like this situation.
So tense. You should just relax a little bit.
No.
Nope.
So you guys get closer. We'll say you're about 60 feet away from the light barrier. And now you guys can all see it. There is a literal barrier of light. And you can see through it. You can see the city through it. You can actually see that maybe 20 feet beyond the barrier, there's Dessa's crumbling outer wall. This wall looks like it's as old as the city itself, far older than 26 years, which is when Vesper believes the Eternal Hunger took Dessa. But 100 feet past that outer wall, you can now see another inner wall. And that one does not look as old as the outer wall or nearly as well constructed. In fact, it looks like it was built rather hastily. And even from here, you can see that it's been leveled in several places. You can't see much beyond that, besides the buildings and the cobblestone streets that you can peek through the holes in these walls. But you don't see any sign of life inside the city from here.
What about unlife?
You don't see any movement at all. In fact, I think even from here, you're struck by the fact that, like, you don't see birds, you don't see bugs, you don't see anything. Nothing seems to be moving inside the dome at all.
And it, for certain, just feels to Tonrir just numb.
So bad. Yeah. So bad. You have an overwhelming feeling of, like, you do not fucking like this at all. Give me an intelligence check, everybody.
Natural one.
Nailed it.
17.
Thank you for taking that curse from me.
Holy shit. What'd you get, Gideon?
14.
And I got 13.
13. Reva, this place seems fine. This is totally okay. You would get a summer home here. Everything's totally good. Everybody else, the crumbling outer wall. You get the impression that this wall was built when the city was built. This is just a normal wall that they built outside the city. That second wall, that was built in a panic. Mm. That is something that they constructed as quickly as possible to keep something out. And you can tell that there are portions of this wall that have been destroyed. So whatever it is that they were trying to do did not work.
Cool.
Seems promising.
Tonmir involuntarily takes a step back and then tries to recompose himself.
Yeah, fuck it. Everybody give me a will saving throw.
Excuse me?
Like against fear.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my lord.
Wow. Ira is going to be the least fearful.
Tonra, roll with disadvantage.
Oh, boy.
That'll be a 5 plus 3 for Reva, so 8.
I got a 9.
2 plus 8, so 10.
26.
What is your roll?
A 19.
Yeah. Okay. Ira, you are the only one that is like, that doesn't feel truly afraid of the situation that you're walking into. Everybody else feels super fucking uncomfortable. Everybody else feels really unnerved. Reyna rolled a nat 20. So
On brand.
Raina looks fine.
There, unfazed, unmoved.
Unflappable.
I think Gideon's... We're standing outside the second broken wall, right?
The light dome.
You're like 60 feet away from the dome. You're quite a bit further away.
I think Gideon... She is scared of the situation, but she's going to kind of steel herself because she is more curious about the dome's magic. So she's going to step forward and try to examine it closer.
You guys all walking together, is Gideon walking by herself. Tell me what it looks like as you approach this barrier, my friends.
Tanra will walk behind Gideon. Almost, again, involuntary, he says, I feel nothing.
Nothing.
I feel all life around in the forest, brimming in the ground, even some of the stuff that might be scuttling up the cliffside. I feel all of that. I sense it. But here, and he points ahead, it's numb. I feel nothing. And as he says that the second time, he looks very unnerved.
Ira, Reva, are you walking forward too?
Yes.
Reva's walking forward, kind of trying to keep it together. But for a different reason than Tanrir, I think for Reva, the proximity to the ocean hits a little too close to home for her. And the gray skies. She's trying to be here in this moment.
I think for Ira, this is like nothing that he's ever experienced before. So I think he's more just cautiously curious than anything.
Ira, you also have a much more positive relationship with the ocean than Reva does.
That's true.
You are from an island. The ocean is like something warm and clear, and it's like a place that you play. For Reva, on the shadow plane, the ocean is... The ocean is where you go to die. It's where all of the horrible aberrations live. The ocean is the last place on earth you want to be. And Tanra, I think that just like the lack of life you can feel here is so horrible. But Gideon, you are drawn forward by this curiosity that you have about the barrier. And as everybody steps forward, as you guys go 10, 15 more feet, as you get within 50 feet of that light barrier, and 100 feet beyond that barrier is the city, everybody give me a will save.
This is a lot of rolling.
Mm-hmm.
We're having not even entered the city yet.
Mm-hmm.
22.
17.
It's also a 22.
11.
Okay. Okay, so Tanra, Reva, 22, Gideon, 17, Ira, 11, Raina got a 12. You are suddenly hit by this really powerful feeling that whatever you needed to do here is not actually that important.
Not worth it.
But there is something somewhere else that is really important. You are overwhelmed by the need to go do something else, something so important. Ira, what do you think that you would feel is so important that you have to leave? Like, where do you feel like you have to go?
Left the stove on, eh?
You left the door open, all the cats are getting out.
I think what Ira feels is he's right near the ocean.
Cowabunga, baby.
I gotta go ride these gnar waves.
I gotta go catch the waves, man.
He gets a sense that he needs to be out on the ocean looking for Jasmine.
Okay. You turn around. You are leaving. That is where you are going. And you guys see Ira just turn on heel. And Gideon, you feel a strong hand gently grab your arm and stop you. And you turn and look to see Raina with like a look of complete urgency on their face. And they say, Cassandra, we have to get to your mother now.
Oh, damn it. They failed their role too, huh?
Mm-hmm. And Gideon, Tanra, and Reva, you felt something in your mind for just a second. But what you know that you need to do is important enough that you were able to brush it off. But you felt enough to suspect that your two friends are under the influence of something.
Reva reaches a hand out and tries to grab at the back of Ira's armor. Wait, where the hell are you going?
One of Ira's five cloaks.
Oh, yeah.
Falls off, and he just keeps going.
Oh, right. That's right. Reva reaches a hand out and grabs for a cloak.
Yes, you grab his outer cloak, which is, like, purple and gold and, like, just fanciful, and then you are met with his inner cloak, which is actually warm.
Hang on. Where are you going?
I have to go. I need to be out on the ocean looking for Jasmine. She has what I need.
Leanne's face is exactly what I picture Reva's face would have
been. It's just question mark, question mark, question mark.
Processing.
Tonry looks to them, now trying to leave. He's not going to do anything for the moment. And he's going to see how this plays out for the next couple of minutes.
In the meantime, Gideon has turned to face Reyna and says, Reyna, it's the magic. You need to snap out of it. My mother is fine.
Okay. Yeah, you say that. And
okay.
Okay. Sounds good. You say, like, you're looking into their brown, very familiar eyes, and they had, like, this glassiness to them. And as you say that, as you sort of remind them that, like, your mother and their partner can handle herself, you see Reyna blink a few times and then shake their head. And you can see that they're fine again. Meanwhile, Ira's trying to escape.
Can Reva try to spin Ira around and shake him?
Slap him, yeah.
I think Ira's just keeps blabbering and he's like...
Very different tactics.
He's like, we're right by the ocean. Like, she could be anywhere. She could be right here. Like, I just have to get out on the ocean and...
But I don't think splitting off right now is a good idea. We got to stick together.
You don't have to come with me, but I really need to... I need to get the essence of Malus.
You should not... And she's, like, shaking.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
As Reva is, like, shaking the stuffing out of you, go ahead and give me another will saving throw.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
12.
You, Ira, you really have this strong feeling that, like, she's close. She's got to be.
Reva puts Ira in a headlock.
Gideon sees that while Reyna has been shaken out of it, Ira is still gunning to leave, and she very quickly walks towards him and slaps him.
Give me another will
Violence
saving
is the
throw,
answer.
Ira.
Maybe I'll use a different d20. Oh my god, it's a natural one.
Oh my god.
This is like that time with the snake.
The pit.
Ira. You don't understand why your friends are trying to come between you and, like, your fucking destiny. Like, you need to find Jasmine and, like, get the essence of Malus and fix it. If you get to her, you can fix everything that's ever gone wrong in your life. You can right your wrongs. And you have this overwhelming feeling. You are so close to her right now. If you can just get down to the water, she's here.
Well, this is very important to him, so I think he's going to do something.
Uh-oh.
To get everyone off his back.
Uh-oh.
Spell time.
Uh-oh.
I was about to say I slap him harder.
Can I do, like, a grapple?
Should we roll initiative? Ira, roll a d20 and add your initiative modifier.
Good God.
Bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't a natural one, but it was a 2. So that's a 5.
That's good.
Okay, you can do one thing and then everybody else gets to go.
I'm going to cast Ghost Sound.
Oh my god. Okay.
That's a level 0 spell. He's just going to say, look, and point behind everyone, because everyone's facing Ira, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to point towards Dessa, and he's going to create a sound.
Sound of the sun rising.
Oh my god.
And the sound of, like, 40... people going, ooh, like ghouls, is going to emanate
oh
from
my
over there.
And can you break us off a piece of that again?
Ooh. Well, it wasn't kind of like that. It was like,
terrifying ooh. Ghouls.
Ooh. Excellent.
Oh, no. Okay. You guys hear, like, from, hey, Ira, give me a performance check.
hold on.
Oh no, guys, it's a pack of ghouls.
What the fuck, man? Okay, that was a natural one.
Oh, wow.
He's like, guys, look, and it literally sounds like, as like, you can basically hear Ira's voice 40 times going,
Revo tries to grapple Ira.
Okay.
And that is a CMB of plus 11. 18.
What is your combat maneuver defense, Ira?
18? 18.
So I got an 18, so I think that beats it.
Reva's got him pinned. What do you guys do?
Well, I can't do what I was gonna do, so hang on.
What was that?
I was gonna electrify him.
Oh. Reva actually has resistance to electric damage.
Reva's like, go off!
Oh my god, you guys.
It was just going to be a little one.
Just a little shock.
To literally shock him out of it.
Oh my god.
Do it.
Okay. All right. I'm casting Jolt.
Oh my god. Okay.
You cause a spark of electricity to strike the target with a successful ranged touch attack. Well, that's a 19 plus 6.
All righty.
All his fur stands on end.
It deals 1d3 of damage. So
you do remember that we were in a fight right before we came here, right?
You weren't. You were just sent to the corner. You just got sent to the no horny corner. You didn't take any damage that I can recall.
Okay.
Well, I rolled a 2.
Reva's resistance is 5, so she's fine.
All right, Ira, take 2 damage.
Okay.
And roll another will saving throw.
Okay, I'm using a third dice this time.
Do it.
If you roll a nat 1, you're jumping off the cliff.
Oh, what the fuck? It's a 3.
Are you?
So I feel like Ira should 10. Get advantage for taking damage.
No.
Jim's like, that's not how that works.
Wow.
Ira, you...
This feeling I got is really strong.
Instead of being talked out of this.
Ira, try to... Man...
We haven't even got inside the city yet.
Gideon, you electrocute him. You can tell it did not help. He is trying to pry himself free of Reva. That boy is going for the ocean.
So he...
Like it's full of catnip and tuna.
I electrocuted him. His hair is all frizzy now.
Yes.
But he's still fighting.
He's still fighting. Tonru, you got anything you want to try?
I have nothing prepared for this situation. I have no spells that would help with this.
Reva doesn't know what Jasmine looks like, right?
If Reyna hits him,
oh my god,
will he die? Oh,
well,
hmm.
I wouldn't say die.
Tonrir, he says simply, "If you do not finish this, Jasmine will die."
Will saving throw.
It's a 20.
That worked.
Wow.
You feel the truth in what he's saying. There is something really serious and really big going on in the world right now, and you are kind of at the heart of it. And you get the impression that what you're about to do is very, very important. And not just your fate, but everybody's fate hinges on what you're about to do. And you snap out of it.
Okay.
I gotta love that Gideon and Reva went straight for violence.
Yes.
Talk to reason.
Tonrir sat back and thought for a little bit and then was like,
oh my god.
Yeah. Upon seeing that the words worked, Gideon looks at Tonrir and then looks at Ira and just goes, and then turns back to the barrier.
Reva lets out a sigh of relief and sets Ira free from being pinned to the ground.
Ira's like, oh man, like my side is super sore. Why is that?
You know what happened to you.
Okay.
She stared into your eyes as she beat you up.
I think Ira's gonna like, does
this awaken anything with me?
He's gonna shake it off and rub his cheek. And then just like kind of shakily bring out that piece of paper again with the poem on it and look at it and is like, okay, yes. And he's kind of reading through the poem again.
So Reyna, who has sort of watched this all go down and felt it for a second and then watched everybody like slap, electrocute, wrestle Ira to try to get him to shake it off. They say, something or someone is protecting this place. We need to be careful.
I think the weight of what Tonrir just said is also impacting him a bit. That if they do not succeed at this, it can mean so much worse for so many other people. And I think that's given him the resolve to finally look back toward the city and try to steady himself and understand what he needs to do. And then his eyes affix to the barrier of light. How far away is he from it?
You are now about 45 feet away.
Is there a pebble or a rock nearby?
Yeah.
Gideon's walking towards it.
Okay. Yep, you go to grab a rock or something and you see Gideon just like hightailing it and Reyna is right at their side.
Tonru will hold on to the rock, but otherwise just watch to see what happens. We'll keep a little bit closer to Gideon and walk behind.
Rivas checking over Ira and it's just like, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Of course. Do you think there's a way in there?
I don't know if we can walk through it. Maybe we should check the barrier before we walk. And then he sees Gideon just marching towards it.
Very like, far away by now.
And there she goes.
Ira, Riva, as you are 45 feet away from the barrier having this conversation, Gideon, you have taken off with Reyna at your side and Tonra close behind. As you approach, say, 20 feet to the barrier, give me a perception check. You too, Tonra.
That's a natural 20.
Reyna got a natural 1.
Wow.
Okay. Okay, there's some disparity in the
feast
rolls.
Feast or famine here.
Nope. 26.
Gideon, your total was at 20?
My total was 20, 31.
31?
Holy shit. 11.
All righty.
2031.
Let me tell you everything you see. So you see the dome of light 20 feet away. To your right and further forward towards the light barrier, you see what looks like humanoid-sized bumps in the landscape. Some of them with grass growing on top of them. Some of them that look pretty fresh. They're graves. You see graves. You also see, Gideon, 10 feet from you, 10 feet from the barrier, you see a single white feather on the ground.
Does it look fresh?
It doesn't look bothered by weather or time. And then Gideon and Tonrir, about 5 feet in front of you, you can see almost like a faint line in the grass. Almost like on the other side of this line, the air is more electrified. Like the grass ahead of you is standing on end, just past this imaginary line. Like something is active there.
Can I do an arcana check?
Sure.
13 plus 11. 24.
There's an area spell active past that line, and it is a summoning spell.
Okay. Gideon turns to Tonrir and says, it's some sort of summoning spell.
Riva has wandered closer to the two of them.
Leanne was rocking in her chair, but it made it look like Riva was just like, burr, 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 burr.
Yeah, Ira, Riva, you catching up to them now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. Yes.
Yeah, as you two are talking, Ira and Riva come up behind you.
Tonrir looks toward where Gideon was looking and then asks, what about the feather?
Gideon looks at the feather and then looks at Tonrir with a little quizzical look on her face. And says, isn't that more your area of expertise?
In this instance. Yes, smartass. In this instance.
Tonru, what happened to your voice?
Hold on, I'm going to roll something.
Oh, Reva's rolling something. What are you rolling?
To see if I resist the urge to bend down and pick up the feather.
Okay, it's 10 feet. It's 10 feet in front of you. You'd have to run 10 feet forward to pick it up.
Ooh, a feather.
Is it I love it. It's past the barrier?
No.
Oh, it isn't.
But it's in that electrified zone?
Yes. I will let you guys know when you get to the barrier. And I will definitely let you know when you get to the city. You're not there.
Yeah.
The barrier is still 20 feet away from you. The feather is between you and the barrier. And also between you and the barrier are what looks like graves.
Okay. I thought these were all like just beyond.
Okay. All outside. Everything I'm describing is outside the barrier.
Okay.
Reva already told us, well, Leanne told us that Reva is resistant to electricity.
I just realized something.
What?
Reva has prestidigitation.
The feather will come to her.
Good. Great.
It has a range of 10 feet.
Oh my God.
And it can slowly lift 1 pound of material.
Okay. All right. Everybody sees this feather. Does Reva act first? Is anyone else acting instantly?
Well, I was going to do a knowledge nature check to see what was up with the feather because it's not adhering to normal feather mechanics.
Okay, you do that while Reva does whatever she's going to do because I think it's too late.
I think that this is perfectly in character for Tonmir to be like, I'm going to check on the, and then watch as it disappears.
At this point, Reva has caught up to Gideon and Tonmir. And she's like, what's everyone staring at? And she looks over.
So she looks over and assumes we're all staring at this feather.
Mm-hmm. It does look rather out of place.
Yes. 10 feet ahead of you is this feather. 10 feet past the feather is the barrier.
She looks at the feather. She extends an arm and crooks a finger upward.
Mm-hmm.
And she casts prestidigitation, which is a cantrip
mm-hmm.
that enables you to perform simple magical effects, including slowly lift 1 pound of material.
Okay.
This is a 10-pound feather.
So you begin to lift this feather into the air. Because you have your one magic level, you reach out through the ether.
Just enough magic to get in trouble with.
Just enough magic to do bad ideas. You reach out through the ether, and you lift this feather. And it seems to have the weight of a normal feather. A big feather, but a normal feather. What are you doing with it?
She just wanted to see what would happen.
So you lift it up and just hold it where it is? Like you don't bring it towards you?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, the feather lifts up and is rotating around, which I think everybody...
And what does Tonmir do?
Everybody holds their breath for a second as this feather starts floating. It might take you a minute to realize it was Reva who did that. Everybody has a scary moment when they think the feather has started to levitate.
I rolled a dirty 20 on my knowledge nature check for that feather.
A dirty 20, huh?
Dirty 20.
This is not like a bird's feather. This is from something bigger.
So Tonmir starts talking and he says, well, it seems that this feather is floating. Why is it floating? And he looks around.
Reva, what is it? Is there like verbal components? What's up with this?
Verbal and then also a gesture. So the gesture was the lifting.
The action of lifting your hand, and then mm-hmm. Reva's what, chanting?
Muttering something under her breath.
Okay. You turn, you see Reva's hand in the air, and she's muttering.
This floating feather. I'm not sure that I recognize it, but it is certainly from something bigger. Reva.
What do you think it's doing here?
It's floating. Maybe it shouldn't be.
Well, nothing's happened yet.
Gideon shakes her head slightly and then walks towards the barrier.
Okay. Gideon, as you walk forward towards this floating feather, towards the barrier, you all hear a voice echo from around you.
Uh-oh.
And the voice says,
leave. This is your final warning.
Reva drops the feather.
It floats delicately to the ground.
And Ira's like, don't have to tell me twice. And he turns around.
Wait.
We just had this conversation.
I've got a plan on the ocean.
Oh, no.
Can Tonmir discern where it came from?
You can try. Gideon, are you still walking forward?
I think Gideon stopped when that voice came up and she turned to look at Tonmir.
Tonmir shrugs.
Okay. If all
you know
Tonmir
as much
does,
as I do.
If all Tonmir does a shrug, then she's going to push forward.
Oh my God. Okay. Gideon, you step forward closer to the barrier, closer to Dessa, and something happens.
Mm. I think Iyer turns around and sees Gideon going further and is like, ugh. And goes back.
The wind picks up around that white feather. And you think maybe for a second it's Reva lifting it again, but no, it's the wind. The wind lifts into the air and swirls it around, and that feather begins to glow. Mm. And the glow grows and grows until it's not just a feather anymore. It's an entire creature. Glowing like it's made out of light.
Cool.
It's a griffin.
Okay.
So good thing you didn't put that feather in your pocket.
This entire creature is glowing like it's made out of light. And you would estimate such a creature to weigh at least 500 pounds if it weren't made out of light. It's 8 feet long from beak to tail. And it's a lion with an eagle's head. And the guardian of this place looks at you out of two golden eyes and roars. Let's roll initiative.
Oh boy.
Uh-oh.
Good, 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 good.
Good, good, good.
Hey, this is Dre Silvertooth, and thank you for listening to episode 61, part one of our brand new arc, The Eternal Hunger. I am so wicked excited to finally be in this arc. I am hopelessly proud of the narrative intro to this episode and of how far our heroes have come. I can't wait for you to see what we have in store. Top of the order, I want to thank our newest patron, Cedar. Thank you for supporting what we do. It means a lot to us and especially to me. My dears, I've said it before and I'll say it again. We have a Patreon. Patreon.com/badheroes. If you like what we do, if you like this story, if you like this show, then maybe it's time to throw a couple bucks our way each month and to support what we do. Our lowest tier on Patreon is just $2. Or if you'd rather make a one-time donation on our Ko-fi, that donation can be whatever you want it to be. You want to send us 69 cents? Go for it. You want to send us $69? Definitely go for it. Our Ko-fi is ko-fi.com/badheroes. Okay, today I have a promo for you. A promo from the new season of Shrimp and Crits. This podcast is run by some dear friends of mine, and I would highly recommend checking out their show and their newest season. See for yourself. Here we go.
Gather round, everybody. Some stories are just best told around the warmth of a campfire. This one's about the Skyway Men and how these three knuckleheads changed our cursed world's fate forever. It's a story about knights, old folk songs, and if I tell it right, it's mostly about love.
Shrimp and Crits Dania is the second season of our actual play podcast with a southern twist. Join the Skywaymen, Sel, Cord, and Gree on an adventure to find lost loved ones.
I know the big lug's out there, or somewhere.
Are you worried?
Nah.
Unravel the mysteries of the stars.
There's just so much nothing out there, and, well, I wanted to see a little bit of something.
And to discover purpose beyond our birthrights.
I don't want to be a builder. I want to see the world.
Shrimp and Crits Dania is an actual play podcast with a southern twist, and it's streaming everywhere, bi-weekly on Mondays.
That was Shrimp and Crits. You can find them everywhere under that name or at shrimpandcrits.com. You can also find me doing a live show with Shrimp and Crits every other Thursday on Twitch. That's Shrimp and Crits Pod on Twitch. You can say hi to us on social media. We are at Bad Heroes Cast on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. Or you can shoot us an email at badheroescast@gmail.com. We also now have a free Patreon tier where you can subscribe to updates and announcements for the show. That's actually the place I would recommend the most. Music in this episode is Hopeful, Inexorable, Harp Waltz, Conjuring, They're Crawling, and Insidious by Monument Studios. Modem, Plague, Smoldering, and Imminence by Kai Engel. And Night Vigil, Darkest Child, and Deep Haze by Kevin MacLeod. This episode also contains sound effects from freesound.org and from Monument Studios. And the full credits for those are in the show notes. As always, our theme is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. I want to give a quick thanks to our sponsors at Roll20. Roll20 lets you play your favorite tabletop games remotely with your friends, no matter where they are. That is all for now, my dears. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of the episode. So you are squaring off against this guardian, this griffin, this summoned creature made of what seems to be pure light. And everybody give me those initiative rolls.
That's a 16 plus 7 for 23.
Okay. Wow, that's good.
15 for me.
I don't know how I'm going to fight this thing. I don't think stabbing is going to do anything.
It's a 13 for Ira.
I got an 11 plus 3.
All right, Riva, you are first.
How does one fight a griffin made of light?
Carefully.
Do you have anything dark?
I would, but I'm out of spell slots already.
What the fuck?
Because I use them. I have two.
I have sweet hell.
As a level one magic user,
I have two spell slots per day.
And I used both of them, once to cast Vanish on myself and once to cast Vanish on the kid. So I'm all out of spell slots.
Mm.
Oh,
I can
no.
only cast cantrips.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what? Fuck it.
That's what you love to hear as a GM.
Famous last
Fuck
words.
Reva's going to cast Haunted Fae Aspect.
Okay.
You surround yourself with disturbing illusions. She's trying to create a distraction.
Disturbing illusions.
Yes.
Disturbing to a griffin made of light particularly.
Sure.
Yeah, so what do your friends see when you do this?
What are griffins afraid of?
Google. Wait, are you Googles. Googling? Google.
What
Google.
Are griffins?
Well, it would be, what are lions and eagles afraid of?
What are lions afraid of? Lions are naturally fearful of elephants and hippos.
Aww.
Snakes. Okay, snakes.
What I searched says bald eagles fear humans at all times.
You should be an elephant.
Okay. Because it's got to be kind of like fae themed. So Riva casts Haunted Fae Aspect. Her eyes turn completely black.
Mm-hmm.
This like weird aura starts to emanate from her.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost like a cloud of shadow.
Mm.
Swallowing any light that would hit her.
Okay.
And her hair begins to rise up and the ends start to extend and grow longer and turn into snakes. Dozens of snakes.
Riva gets the full-blown Medusa treatment.
Yeah, Iro looks away. He's like, I've heard this one before.
Gideon, you fucking hate this. You are not...
Wait, she's not afraid of snakes anymore.
She's not mechanically afraid of snakes anymore, but she doesn't like them.
They're still not great.
So you see this, like, griffin of light rise up in front of you. You think, oh, shit. And then you hear... get from your side.
And turn to see Riva. And yes. This horrifying conjuration of nightmare fuel.
Gorgon-like Riva.
They're just like continuously growing out and extending and kind of blocking the field of view. Is everyone kind of gathered close together?
I think I'm kind of behind everyone, but all you three or four, five, six are kind of up towards that.
That's a lot.
Feather that's now a griffin.
She takes a couple steps forward and tries to block everyone in the party from view with her wall of snakes.
Okay.
Hate it.
So that happens.
Okay. All right. Tanru, your turn.
Great.
And I want to say, you guys can tell this is a conjured illusion of a creature. This is not a real creature. This is a summoned light-based illusion. You get the impression it can certainly interact with the environment, including you, but it's not a real animal. What I'm saying is you can kill it.
Okay.
Thanks.
You know, it doesn't have a tiny nest of baby griffin somewhere or something. It's an illusion of light.
Okay.
I see.
I'm saying you can hurt it and I won't get on your ass about it. That's yeah, what I'm saying.
I was thinking like, do I have handle animal? But you've made it so I don't need that.
It's like a sentinel.
It's like a sentinel, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I will cast Protection from Energy on myself for Radiant Energy. That'll be my turn. And then I'm going to move back to, because I have 20 feet of movement that I can do. So I'm just going to move 20 feet back to be in the back for the moment.
Okay.
And then Rothaween, lest we forget Rothaween. Tanra will command Rothaween to attack and do a dive on the entity to do a claw attack.
Okie dokie. Let's see it.
10 to hit.
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. That's my turn.
Okie dokie. Gideon, you are the closest to this friend.
Mm-hmm.
You are about 16 feet away from the barrier. You're about 6 feet away from this new friend that you've made, and it opens its mouth and lets out like a screech and then flaps its wings and lunges towards you and is going to try to scratch you with its claws. How's a 23?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, sure. I want you to take 13 points of radiant damage.
Dang. And I wasn't distracted at all by the illusion.
Gideon is in front of you, okay. So not for her.
Mm.
You spent your turn doing this cool illusion. I'll give you this. Gideon is right in its reach, so it lunges forward and rakes at her with both talons. And then seeing this horrible snake thing, it lifts up in the air higher. So Gideon can move without taking an attack of opportunity. Gideon, it is your turn.
Ouch.
Imagine that we die from a creature made of light instead of the undead.
Hmm. So Gideon staggers backwards after being clawed and looks at the griffin up in the air, looks at Reyna and everybody else, and then looks at the barrier and then takes off in a dead sprint towards it.
Oh my God.
Okay, well... You are 16 feet away from the barrier, I mean, you can definitely reach it. You'll still have enough time to do another action also, if you want to, because it's within 30 feet. But, okay, you just dead-ass sprint towards this barrier of light, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does anything happen?
You...
explode.
You explode. No, you run towards this barrier, Gideon, and... do you reach out to put your hand on it?
Yeah.
Your hand goes through it.
Okay, then she just keeps going until her entire body is through it.
Okay, you run past the barrier. It tickles. It kind of feels warm, when you run past it. It's almost like you ran through a hot shower really quick. And now you're on the other side of the barrier. What do you do?
I think she comes to a stop and looks at herself, like to check if anything happened when she passed through the barrier.
No.
And then looks back at the party. Just kind of be like, huh.
Hmm. Interesting.
Can we still see Gideon?
Yes. Okay. It's almost like she's on the other side of a soap bubble. Hmm. There's like a little shine, a little film, but you can definitely still see her.
Ira waves.
I'm sure Raina loved this.
Oh, yeah. You see just like absolute fucking panic. Raina's at the absolute bottom of initiative.
Oh, no.
Gideon. Gideon. Hello. Gideon, Gideon.
Hello, hello, hello.
Roll me an Arcana check.
Okay. 14 plus 11, 25.
Something did happen when you passed through this dome of light, through the ether, through wherever magic travels. You can feel that somewhere not far away, a silent alarm went off.
Cool. Good.
Ira, cool. Your turn. Oh, wait, Gideon, you're going to do something else.
Christ, let me do a thing.
I'm sorry.
This is going well.
So she just knows somewhere within her that a silent alarm has been tripped.
Mm-hmm.
Then she's going to try to cast Flare at the Griffin.
Okay.
Fight light with light.
Yeah. You get to do a fortitude saving throw to save from being dazzled.
From being dazzled. 15. So it's not dazzled. Does it take some damage?
Nope.
Really?
It's a cantrip. It's just meant to dazzle them.
Okay. Great.
They saw Gideon run past the barrier. Nothing really happened. She looked a little confused. And then they see a tiny, like, in front of the griffin that seems to do nothing.
It's not phased.
Everybody just saw Gideon sprint past the barrier. Does anyone say anything? Does anyone do anything?
Oh, well, I mean, Reva knows what she's doing now.
Oh, man.
Can I see past Reva? Because I'm behind Reva and she's doing that thing.
You're behind the nightmare?
The cloud of snakes?
I think you can see past her fucking cloud
of snakes.
They're
kind of like moving between and writhing. Yeah.
Sure, yeah, you can see past her Medusa cloud.
It only lasts for one round, so it'll be gone after this.
Ira, it is your turn.
Well, I think Ira's squinting because he's not quite sure he saw what he just saw, because it's kind of unbelievable.
What's Raina doing?
Waiting desperately for their turn in addition. Vibrating in place.
Ira is going to cast Cord of Shards.
A classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
A throwback.
Ira is going to swing his drum around so it's in front of him, grab his little drumstick, and say, Cord of Shards, and then he hits the drum, and they go, poof. It's a 2d6 damage.
Okay. And that's a 2, so.
Yeah, you don't make it. 5 plus 5, 10 damage.
Okay. Your notes sort of take physical form and slam at this creature of light. It's almost like light slamming into light, and you see it hit it like a physical force.
Cool.
Do we get any sense of how much damage that does? Like, is it kind of, does it stumble back? Does it shake it off? Does it just be like, ow?
Actually, you know what's weird? Mm-mm-mm. Everybody roll me a perception check really fast.
Me too?
Mm-hmm.
Natural 20, 31.
Okay.
11.
31.
Jesus.
15.
From behind the barrier, I see all.
Ira, what did you get?
20. A dirty 20.
Dirty 20. Ira and Gideon. So that hit that you just did a pretty good chunk of damage to it. You also noticed that after it hit Gideon, it looked a little less robust. Like not just taking damage, but also dealing it is wearing it down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now it's Raina who just like looks at Gideon with this fucking face of like,
I see that I have my work absolutely fucking cut out for me.
This is my life now.
This is my life now. This is what they're going to be doing for the next however long. Reyna sprints after you, Gideon, straight away, and they reach the barrier, don't cross it, spin around, and aim their short bow at the griffin, and they fire. And they place themselves between the griffin and you. And they deal some damage. You guys see that arrow. It fires at the light, sinks into it. You can almost see the light like spread like a wound before the arrow drops. This griffin is now definitely looking worse for wear. Mm-hmm. Reva, it is your turn. You have this look on your face. The thing is that the expression that you have is the expression of someone who's about to do something that's a bad idea.
Have you met Reva?
I have.
I don't know what to tell
you. What's new?
But this grin, it's like extra bad. Just did the math. This griffin looks not great.
That's really rude.
Well, not. You can see
that. You hurt its feelings.
The griffin cries.
Okay, this griffin has no feelings. It's an illusion of light. It's light shaped like a griffin.
They're like, do not make this griffin have feelings.
Stop giving this griffin feelings. I'm weak and I can't take it. This summoned creature with no feelings that is made strictly of light. Oh my God, no. Coolness just sent the griffin takes 4 points of self-esteem damage. No, it doesn't. It has no ego or personality. It is an illusion of light. This illusion of light is...
Griffin has to go talk to its therapist.
I can't. Okay. You guys? The outline of this creature made of light is becoming fuzzy, as if this summoned creature is beginning to fade.
How high up is it?
Oh, 10 feet off the ground.
I mean,
are you torn between two bad ideas? Because that's what it sounds like.
So first of all, the illusion drops because it only lasts for one round.
Okay,
snakes are gone.
Everyone breathes a sigh of relief because that was horrible.
How far away is the barrier from Reva?
20 feet from you, 40 feet from Tanru, because he ran 20 feet behind you.
Reva looks up at the griffin, looks at the barrier, looks up at the griffin again.
Looks up at the GM in the sky and apologizes.
And runs past everyone to the barrier. And right before crossing it, she spins around and chucks a dagger at the griffin.
Okay.
Because now that she's seen that Reyna was able to deal damage to it using physical objects, she will try too. 25.
That'll hit.
Okay. 3 damage.
Mm-hmm.
So right after throwing the first knife, she whips out a second one and throws that as well.
Okay.
And that's going to be a 27 to hit.
Yes.
And...
No, it doesn't hit.
And that's another 3 damage. So 6 total.
Great.
And right after doing that, she takes a step backwards and is through the barrier.
Reva, did you remember to put your illusion back on your eyes, or are they all black still?
What a good question.
And is your hair red?
Right.
The whites of your eyes and the red of your hair, it's an illusion. It's a glamour.
Yeah, I mean, I think for now, she does not.
Okay.
Yeah, she runs through the barrier.
Okay.
And Ira is left standing in front of the griffin, the squishiest member of the party.
Well, Tanra is out there, right?
Yeah, but he's Tanra's 20 feet behind
20 feet back. I think Reyna looks over at you and watches you step backwards as you walk through this barrier of light that you don't know anything about. And
it's fine. Gideon did it.
Yeah,
that makes it a good decision.
You too. You know, it's great because the only thing that Gideon and Reva have in common is that they're full of bad, reckless ideas. You step backwards through the barrier and now you're standing next to Gideon. And Reyna is standing in front of you too. Like, what is up with these boneheads?
Is there any second wave of the alarm that goes off?
it's not like a continuous alarm. It's more like a little ding. And when Reva passes through, you can feel that ding.
It's like one of those motion detector bells.
You can feel something moving through the ether to notify someone.
I assume Reva looks very proud of making it through the barrier and her cool attack.
Mm-hmm.
Gideon taps her on the shoulder and just says, something happened when we passed through the barrier.
What do you mean?
I'm not quite sure. But I believe whatever's in here is now aware of our presence.
Tanru, your turn.
Okay. Tanru's just going to lose an arrow at this point. That it was like a 5 to hit.
Mm-mm.
And then Rolthwain will do another claw attack.
Mm-hmm.
And also not hit. Okay, that was a fun turn. Next.
Oh, no.
Ira, my guy.
Yeah, I think Ira kind of looks around and is like,
what? No, sorry. That was me telling you I'm going to hurt you now.
Oh, no.
Shit.
Sorry for the mistake. Ira, does a 28 hit?
I love rhetorical questions.
Nah, Ira's tough as nails.
Nah, it doesn't now that you've asked. Ira, this griffin, seeing you now standing here, your squishy little self no longer shielded by a bunch of illusory snakes, this sort of blurry cloud of light that is vaguely shaped like a griffin lets out a sort of faint roar and then dives down at you and bites you.
Mm.
And you take 10 points of radiant damage.
Ow.
Reaver's like, oh, I knew I was forgetting something.
Your best buddy.
Squishy friend.
Gideon, it is your turn.
What to do? What to do?
We made it in, but at what cost?
Here we are.
Yeah, it's really that gif of, what are you going to do now? I don't know. I never thought I'd make it this far.
It's the title of our autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gideon's going to pull out her trusty crossbow and fire a bolt.
Let's do it.
It's going to be a biography because we're not going to be around to write it.
Only Drakdor will know what befalls you today.
16 plus 6, 22.
Okay, that'll hit.
This one. 6.
Okay. Yeah, this crossbow bolt flies through this griffin and it now looks like this griffin is just holding on by an absolute thread. It is now just a cloud of light. Ira, it is you.
Okay. Ira was waiting for this.
Uh-oh.
I think Ira is going to take his crossbow out and use that.
Great. Let's see it.
So he's going to like reach behind his back and take his crossbow out and then...
And then throw it.
He's not going to throw it. He's going to pull the string back and he's going to say, go to the light. I mean, go away from the light. And he lets go. And it's a 1.
You D8. Are the light.
Wait, you know crossbows have
hold
a trigger,
on.
Right?
Yeah, hold on. You did just describe the motion of a bow.
There's so much wrong stuff that just happened.
So I take the croissant and I cock it real quick.
I like the idea that everybody watches Ira fire the crossbow manually.
Like a freaking slingshot.
Like a slingshot. Okay, roll the hit.
Does anybody else find crossbows really ineffective?
Luckily for you, it's like right there. So no matter how you load this crossbow.
I just threw the arrow. It's a 13 plus 9 to hit, so 22.
Yep, that'll do it. Well, give me that damage.
I bought these tiny, tiny throwing spears.
It's a 4.
I'm going to pass out. Okay.
Ira, you somehow launch a crossbow bolt through some series of events.
It maybe took a couple tries.
At this cloud of light. I mean, listen, there's a giant cloud of radiant light in front of you.
Gideon is behind the barrier going,
Gideon and Reva are behind the barrier making faces at you. You're under a lot of pressure.
That's fair.
You're thinking about your ex for some reason.
It's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on in your heart and in your head, but somehow you manage to fire a bolt at this creature. And as your bolt goes through and deals the final blow to this summoned shape of light, it disappears. And before you, that feather floats down to the ground.
So that's what that feather does.
Tonrir is feeling a little bit foolish that he's going to have to take bow lessons from Ira because his attempts at hitting anything did not happen.
Also, both of Reva's daggers reappeared back in her belt after they hit the ground.
Because you have the blink back belt.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah.
Did Gideon notice Reva's eyes?
I think, yeah, when you guys had that little exchange during initiative, I think you saw that, like, Reva's hair suddenly was no longer red and she didn't have any whites to her eyes. They're all this dark black.
Mm-hmm. I think Reva takes a second after this cloud of light dissipates and she, like, runs a hand through her hair and it turns red again.
And do you blink and your eyes?
And her eyes are back to normal.
Nice.
Gideon squints a little bit at that, but doesn't say anything.
Reva looks at Gideon and is like, so now what?
Did anything happen to the barrier when the griffin died?
Nope. Barrier looks exactly the same.
Okay. So Gideon is going to speak to Reyna and gesture for Tonrir to come closer as well. And I think Ira is also close by, right?
Like 10 feet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gideon kind of summons everybody closer, but tells them not to step through yet.
You guys all assemble by Gideon, yeah?
Yes.
Along the way, Tonrir will pick up the feather.
Okay.
And stash it.
Reyna, Ira, and Tonrir look in at you from outside the barrier.
And Gideon kind of like not quite touching it, but like moves her hand along the barrier and says, I noticed something when I passed through and also when Reva passed through. I believe some sort of alert has been set off. And whatever is in here with us is more than likely aware that we are now here.
I mean, it's not like it's going to be any more aware if you guys come on through.
There was a new alert when Reva passed through.
Who here has hunted before? Like, for food?
Reyna holds up a hand.
There is a plant called a Venus flytrap. Is anybody here familiar with it?
Reyna puts their hand down.
The Venus flytrap attracts insects and clasps around them when one has landed within its reach. However, it does not happen immediately. It waits for the trigger to be touched a couple of times or three times or four times before it decides to act. That is what I'm worried about.
Hmm. Tonru, did you just call us all insects?
Yes.
As you guys are having this conversation, Gideon, you're very close to the barrier, right?
Yeah.
And you had your arm held out, gesturing at it. Not touching it, but gesturing at it.
Mm-hmm.
As you do that, the fate cub runs down your arm.
Oh, good. Good.
And reaches out towards the barrier. It actually jumps, like it's going to jump through. Because Reyna's right on the other side. Reyna and you are close enough to touch. And so it runs down your arm as if it's going to jump to Reyna. But it hits the barrier like the barrier is a physical force and bounces back against you.
That's what I was afraid of. Once we go in, we can't go out.
What is the Fate Cup doing now?
It lets out a little churring sound and curls back up around your neck. You hear like upset little chittering sounds like. And then you see the two heads start arguing with each other, like whose fault that was.
So Gideon, looking at the chittering chaos bean around her neck. Hand still outstretched, looks at the barrier and then looks at Tanya, Ira, and Reyna and says, "That's another problem."
Ira's like, "I see you didn't put a lot of thought into this."
Okay, Mister uses a crossbow like a slingshot.
Hey, it did the job, didn't it?
Can't argue with the results.
Gideon, Reva, do you check the solidness of this barrier?
Yeah, Reva reaches
after seeing that. Yeah, I would say
she raps on it with her knuckles.
Yeah, as far as you can tell, it is a completely immovable object. But when you guys touch it again, that alarm does not go off. Because you can't
pass through it.
Uh-huh.
Pass through this barrier, not anymore. And as you have this realization, Reva and Gideon, you inside the barrier, and Reyna, Tonmer, and Ira outside, as you realize, it is a one-way trip past this barrier of light, this wall of radiant energy. You feel the hairs on the back of your neck lift up. You feel something wrong that compels you to turn and look towards the ruins of Dessa. You see those walls and buildings crumbling, wooden carts overturned and half rotted away, and grass growing up between cobblestones. As you scan around, you see that the city is green. Greener than you expect it was in life, with moss and grass and the occasional determined tree pressing up into a place previously occupied primarily by people. But now that you really look, you don't see a single bird or rodent or even an insect. You don't see any movement at all, except for the wind moving tattered curtains inside open windows and shaking the leaves of sparse young trees. You listen, and the wind moves through the city, and it feels a little like Dessa is taking a breath. And it's then that you see them, emerging from inside buildings and crawling down rooftops and along the crumbling city walls. Or rather, it's then that you know they've seen you.
And we both see this at the same time?
I think all of you see this. These creatures, they come by the dozens. These skeletal creatures, these skeletal people. Their skin is pulled taut over protruding bones, and their limbs are strangely long. Their overgrown nails are nearly as long as their fingers. And whatever's left of their clothes is ripped and filthy. They move along surfaces almost like spiders, on all fours and at a terrifying speed. And you know instantly and without thinking that when they look at you, that these creatures are hungry, starving, and that they do anything to get to you. And Gideon and Reva, you also know that you can't get out.
Whoops.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-